You're listening to Welcome to Comics,
episode number 322. This week, we talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Change is constant. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/welcometocomics. And now,
the cast begins.
Do we have any witty banter? Any, like, topical things to discuss? Oh, yeah, you saw Solo.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did. I liked it. I liked it. So here's the thing about it. I think it's not as epic as, like, the main saga stories are. But this one's pretty good, and there's a lot. If you, like, read the EU books as a kid, man, there's a lot of stuff in there. Hey, let me. I'm gonna share something with you. This is not a spoiler for the movie, but do you guys remember the PlayStation? There was a PlayStation 1 game that was a Star Wars fighting game called Masters of Terras Kasi. Do you remember this game?
No.
It was a PlayStation game, and it was a Star Wars fighting game.
Oh, the awful, awful fighting game. Yeah.
No. Yeah. That is now canon. That martial arts style is canon now.
Oh, no. That's awesome. Because
the name is dropped.
They had an opportunity to scrub that from the record, and they chose to revisit. That's fantastic. Nah,
it's really just a name drop, but it made me laugh because of that terrible game.
And I feel like that's a lot of what they're doing with their EU, is they're not, like, scrapping it completely. They're, like, they said it doesn't count anymore. None of the EU, old EU counts. But they're, like, dropping names and reintroducing characters that you like. So I think they just, like, want to go about it in a more comprehensive plan sort of way, which sounds great to me. Like, there's no reason you can't have some weird martial arts. Like,
the thing with when they got rid of the old EU is that they never said it would not come back. They just said, okay, we're kind of starting from a blank slate. But obviously, Disney has been bringing things back into it. There's a lot of stuff, EU, like, name drops and things in Solo. And it's cool. Like, I know everybody, like, you know, they have this Aiden Ehrenreich guy who plays Solo. And everybody was like, oh, you know, no, everybody hated him immediately.
Because he didn't look like Harrison Ford 50 years ago?
No, they were not going to like anybody.
Yeah.
Because nobody looks like Harrison Ford.
Nobody is like Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
Let's be real here.
And it's like, so there's this Bohemian Rhapsody coming out, right? This movie about biopic about Queen, right? And Rami Malek is playing Freddie Mercury, but he's not Freddie Mercury, and no, he's never going to be Freddie Mercury, and that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I feel like on Twitter, and no, it's more on Tumblr, that they have, like, the dream cast kind of things, and they just pick people that look like the right people, and I'm like, but that person's not a good, like, they wouldn't play that part well, like, like, that's not their acting style, like.
Like, I've never seen this guy, Aiden Ehrenreich, in anything else, but I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, nobody fucking saw Mark Hamill in anything before, so, like that's the other thing, too, is I appreciate that it seems like they're trying to uphold the legacy of introducing lesser-known actors that they feel like are really good and giving them this stage to perform. And I mean, I think the prequels kind of did that in some places, but, like, Ewan McGregor, it wasn't that. Natalie Portman wasn't that. I think they tried to do that for Anakin, and that didn't work out so hot. But I feel like Disney has enough know-how and experience with this kind of a thing that they can pick good actors.
And, like, you know, Donald Glover, the first scene where he's in and he first talks, I swear to God, it sounds like Billy Dee Williams did the voiceover.
That's awesome.
That's great.
And Woody Harrelson is, he's awesome in it. He's great. He's Woody Harrelson, right? He does a great job. The movie, like, it's not the best movie I've ever seen, but it's good. It's like a solid movie, and I think it's a solid Star Wars movie.
I mean, my understanding, I haven't seen it, is that it's just a pretty decent heist movie.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, you've seen about a dozen of those, and honestly, I can't think of any stinkers off the top of my head, so I'm not going to have a good time watching that, probably. So, yeah, why not watch
this? I mean, this is a heist movie that has a Star Wars coding on it, and yeah, it answers some questions that probably didn't need to be answered about Star Wars, but
that's fine. People like Ant-Man, and Ant-Man is a heist movie in Marvel.
I love Ant-Man.
Yeah, and it's a good movie, but like nobody's like talking about whether or not it upholds the legacy of Marvel cinema. Like that's the like there's so many. I mean, we don't even need to mention that there's so many coded and covered expectations for anything with Star Wars on it that has to matter for some grand narrative of the entire game. Like, no, you can just have a fun movie. And I think that's what, like, I like Rogue One because it did something different stylistically and it did something different narratively. Like, it showed you that you could do a non-Skywalker story. You can do something that wasn't about the hero's journey within the Star Wars universe, and that movie still worked. But, like, Rogue One was still epic with, like, the whole galaxy needing to be in the balance. Like, let's take that one more step and just make it a fun movie in Star Wars. Like, I would love a Cad Bane movie if nobody knows who the fuck Cad Bane is. Like, just have him go out bounty hunting, you know? Just code it in Star Wars. It's fine.
And that's how this is. It's, like, it's a movie that takes place in the Star Wars universe, but it's a small movie. And Han Solo is not... He's not the Han Solo we know from the original trilogy yet. And that's what this movie's about. It's like him coming into his own person. And he meets Chewbacca and Lando and stuff. And it's cool. I really liked it. I want to watch it. I'd like to watch it again, for sure.
All right. So I'm taking Friday off to watch it in the morning.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. But don't go into it thinking it's going to be the next Empire Strikes Back. And I don't think you will, but I think there are Star Wars fans who expect every movie to be the next Empire, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and not just they're going to expect it to be the next Empire, but they're going to expect it to be the Empire that they remember the first time they ever saw Empire. And all of the other crap that they've built onto it of their experience of that nostalgia from the movie. Like, you can't.
Can you imagine if Empire came out now? People would rip it apart. If the only movie that had come out, say that there was the internet in 77 and 80. If Empire had come out, people would have ripped it apart. Like now we can look back at the reveal of Vader being Luke's father fondly, right? But can you imagine if there were people who had been like building these fan theories for 3 years and then they were totally like blindsided by that? It would be insane. It would be the same thing. I think the problem nowadays, and Star Wars is the biggest victim of it, is that people just have an outlet to complain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just hear about it more.
Yeah, and I bet, I mean, people probably were ripping it apart back in the 70s. It's just, you know, they couldn't do it as vocally as they do now. Mm-hmm. So we never heard it. And then because it was such a good movie, that was what took over as like the way everyone thinks about it, because that is the majority opinion.
Yeah, that's exactly. What survives over time for sure. Well, do we want to talk about this week's comic?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
This week's comic.
All right, this week we read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles: Change is Constant. It's the first four issues of the IDW run. This is by Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz. And Kevin Eastman is one of the co-creators of Ninja Turtles, right?
One of the originals, yeah.
Yeah. So I really... I didn't know I would like this kind of genre so much, but I feel like animals doing samurai things is like my jam. Because I like this, and I really like Usagi Yojimbo, and shit, there's another one. I don't remember. But, like, samurai shit, and, well, I've always liked westerns, and they're kind of the same genre in a lot of ways, so I should have guessed that this would be something I like, but I was pleasantly surprised by this in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's... Ninja Turtles sort of opened the door for, sort of like, anamorphic, whatever the heck you could come up with kind of ideas. And interestingly, Mirage Studio, like, helped elevate Usagi Yojimbo and a couple random ones. Some of them took off, some of which didn't. But you'd be, like, surprised. Like, you ever watch that cartoon Cowboys of Mumesa?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that was a guy, the guy who came up with that was a writer or artist or something. Like, he like, did a run of Ninja Turtles, the original Ninja Turtles. And they were just like, hey, you got a book there you want us to publish for you? And he's like, yeah, okay. And they did. And then it took off, and they got some cartoon. So, I mean, they're... The Mirage Studios is definitely sort of like an elevating voice for, I guess, that genre in general. So, you know, usually when you're like, man, I didn't think I'd like this. It's like, if you like Ninja Turtles and you like anything else, there's a good chance it's probably related by, like, pretty close proximity. Just because that was a sort of like a creative house for that whole thing. So going way back, it's kind of crazy.
See, that's awesome, because I feel like some of the big publisher stuff is more filtered. Maybe that's not the right word. Or like we just did a whole thing on Legacy with Starman. And while Legacy is great, the other side of it is that we get like characters that continually get reused, like Voodoo, even though they don't fucking need to because it's a terrible character in a terrible comic. You know, like I appreciate that smaller studios, it seems, are more willing to take the risk because it's not like they have these huge brands that they feel like they want to maintain from 20 years ago or 30 or 40 years ago. Like, you can try something new, and if it works, great, and if it doesn't, yeah, whatever, you just try something new. So I do like that. So I feel like I need to take more chances on smaller studio stuff like that and just pick up things that have cool covers. Well, I don't know if I would pick this up. The art cover art for this is really cool, but...
Well, Kevin Eastman did the cover for this, for sure. So it looks like original Ninja Turtles, which is great. I really like his style. And it's cool, too, because I've met him a couple times, and when he signed your stuff, he'll do a little Ninja Turtle doodle, and yeah, it always looks like... It does seriously, like, the head he uses is, like, the head for every Ninja Turtle he ever, like, ever does. It's great.
I was just going to say, when he does it, do you ask him which one it is? And he'll be like, come on, man, you can't tell? Obviously.
It's Raph, dude. Every time. That's, like, his favorite guy. That's true.
Is this, like, the original... origin story from the like original comic book run?
This is like a reimagining of it, if that makes sense.
So like my experience with Ninja Turtles, like when I was a kid, I was a huge fan of the cartoon, and I liked the live action movies they did, but I never... this is my first time reading the comics, so this is like a new experience for me. And, you know, I really enjoyed this story. I thought it was really cool. The way that their origin story happened and stuff like that. I mean, it was cool. Like, it was cool seeing familiar characters like Casey Jones and April and Baxter Stockman and stuff. And I want to keep reading because I want to know if General Krang is a brain.
Yes.
So I'm definitely going to keep reading this. But yeah, so my experience, my previous experiences with this was mostly just from the cartoon, yeah, the original cartoon.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to like a quick history lesson, if you ever watched the movie, essentially all that is they cherry picked like a couple of the one shots. I think it's the Leonardo one shot, the Raphael one shot, and the a pretty brief run that covers basically the events of the movie and the comic, which I think is like, I want to say like 10 through 13 or something like that. So like, essentially in the comics, like the very first issue, they just, they go and they just mess up Shredder. Like, that's all they do. Like, Splinter's like, hey, here's your origin story. Oh, also, here's my arch enemy. You're going to go fuck him up. All right, have fun. And they go and they do just that. And, like, it's sort of like this ominous ending because he, like, pulls out a grenade to try and kill all of them. And then, like, they bail off the roof and you assume he dies in said grenade explosion. But he ends up coming back with a vengeance and really, you know, tearing him up. And so, like, the movie kind of takes his return of Shredder arc and then kind of, you know, fusses with it to make it a little bit more cohesive to that movie story.
Mm-hmm.
And they run with that. So like when Raphael gets all jacked up by foot soldiers and they like, you know, have to leave town, like that's actually in the comics. So, the interaction between Raphael and Casey Jones, that's from the Raphael one shot. It's like one of like the most defining, like well written, like just raw like Ninja Turtle comics. And so they basically just pulled that issue and made a scene with it. It's great.
Nice. So
the movie is probably the closest thing you're gonna get to like if you've seen the movie, you probably have a good feel for what the original comic is like. That's where most of that pulls from. The cartoon was just like, hey, we're going to do some crazy stuff and make it kid-friendly. So there's a lot of creative liberties of the cartoon, in terms of like how that compares to the original comic. Good. This one, it looks like they're trying to like merge those two in a way.
Right? Yeah.
So
it's
kind of cool.
Like my question reading this was like, what? I was trying to feel at the audience, and I had the same, it's funny, I had this exact same question with Yusagi Yojimbo, because it has cute bunnies and shit, and then, like, hella blood and murder. And I have the same question here, because, like, these guys are cool, and there's obviously, I don't know if I'm bringing a young adult audience to this because of my memories of the cartoon and the movies, and that, like, I'm remembering that younger people are interested in Ninja Turtles. So I don't know if I'm bringing that to this or if this kind of has that like place where it wants to sit like it's a little edgy for younger readers, but not quite the maturity of like a super adult reader. And it's trying to like strike that balance. Like it's got the blood, it's got the fighting. Like you see Leo like slice people open and is unabashed about that, but it's not gory per se, you know, and it's got Casey Jones getting abused by his father. But it doesn't get super grimdark about it. So it's like trying to strike that balance in a really careful way, I'll say.
Yeah, they do a good job kind of straddling that line, don't they?
Yeah, I feel like they do. The one part that makes me question it is Casey Jones. Because, man, I don't know. If I get abused like that, I don't know if I'm happy-go-lucky. And I don't... Maybe it's just because we don't get his character development, really. We just kind of have Raph show up and be like, hey, let's go bust some heads together. But he strikes me as odd that he just, like, runs off and decides to be a vigilante, and that's not explained why, just because it seems cool and fun. I don't know. He seems like a character kind of out alone with no explanation.
The introduction of... him being abused, and you know, we get the little bit about how his mom dies of cancer and he's not supposed to fight with his dad. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, him beating up people with a bat. I kind of took it as like, maybe that's how he lets off steam, right? Like he's coming from a bad place, but the other half of me is like, well, this could just be like some of that 80s weirdness where it was kind of the pop culture of the time to just have these weird ass characters with kind of like strange motives that I think were less thought through today or than they would be today. I mean, and like, I think that's super common actually. In a lot of 80s media, like you see heroes or villains who just kind of like have their thing and they do their thing, and we have to accept that as it is. Whereas today, you know, people have like a tragic backstory or all these deep emotional reasons for doing something, or it's like tied in to, you know, it's tied into like the zeitgeist of how I think now we often want a lot of detail for motive. Whereas I think, you know, 30 years ago, it was more like, no, nah, man, it's just awesome when people are vigilantes and beat up bad guys.
See, I kind of read it a bit as like from the nostalgia perspective, I feel like my Ninja Turtles nostalgia enhanced this for me in a lot of ways with the turtles themselves. But I kind of feel like the opposite is true with Casey. I feel like in my mind, it takes one line of Raph being like, hey, man, why don't you go see a therapist? And I understand that a Ninja Turtle probably doesn't have a concept of what a therapist is after, you know, the amnesia he gets from Old Hobbit and all that. So, I mean, maybe that's a bit of a stretch to be like, hey, why don't you go, but like, you know, how about you talk to somebody about what's going on? Like, and he would just say, like, I can't afford that, so I do this instead. Or I, like, some explanation of why he's not doing something more reasonable, and that's why he chooses to be, I mean, it's not a logical conclusion, but it doesn't have to be. The kid's the victim of, you know, continual abuse.
So I would put forth that it's a very current, like, 2010s thing to be so self-aware about your feelings that you know that you need to get help. Whereas, and okay, I gotta say this with the caveat that, like, a lot of stuff that I watched in the 90s, I don't have like a great memory of because I was a kid, but I remember that a lot of stuff there, it was media showing people just taking situations as they were rather than like being more introspective. And I think it's gotten more socially acceptable to see a therapist or be introspective today. Or, I mean, just like one example.
Yeah.
But like, I think that's part of why they just take it at like face value that Casey's going around beating up people with a bat.
Although I do like when he, I appreciate that they finally give like a, at least I didn't know before, it's probably there, but I love the explanation of why he has a hockey mask. Not just for fun, like he's actually a hockey player. I like that.
Well, yeah, they kick around the idea in the original comic, like, oh yeah, he played, you know, he played very briefly before he got injured or something, you know. He's got that, like, East Coast jock kind of thing going on. Like,
yeah.
Inherent in his personality, which I think is sort of, like, about the only, I would say, like, motivation his character ever originally got. So he's kind of like, now it's like, oh, yeah, he's, like, you know, he's got a little bit of that East Coast jock thing. You know, he's got some trouble at home now. What I think is weird about this particular run starting off is he's a little bit more defined and has a little bit more like clear motivation than even the turtles have. Because like always in Ninja Turtles, they give this like long-winded speech about like, oh, here's how this happened, and then it was this industrial accident, you got turned into this, and then, you know, like, I was in Japan, so, like, I know jujitsu, so, like, I taught you guys ninjutsu and all this stuff, right? No explanation of how they know ninjutsu or martial arts or anything in these war issues. It's just, in 18 months, they are full-grown adults with clearly an affinity for like enhanced martial arts combat, right? With no explanation. It's so weird. Like, they almost always give the turtles like this huge, like, I don't want to say huge, but this very like in-depth, maybe, I mean, I wouldn't even say convoluted, because it's pretty easy to follow. Just they give you this pretty well laid out thing of like, here's what they are, here's what they're about, here's their motivations, and here's a little bit of how each of their personalities are, right? And it's like, yeah. Okay, cool. And they did a little bit of that with the personalities, but, like, nothing about, like, oh, how do they know ninjutsu? Do they even know ninjutsu? Like, that's kind of another thing, too. It's like, do they even know that? Like, you know what I mean? Or are they capable and they're just, like, messing people up? I don't know.
It seems like they learned it from Splinter, but then it doesn't explain where Splinter, like, Splinter had the cognitive thing going on, but I don't know where he learned ninjutsu. Like, did he learn it when the guys broke in and did it and they've just been copying that? Like, he's been running around the lab, but were there ninjas just like training in the lab for Splinter to watch when he was like little rat guy?
But then they
watch them like movies or something. Like, I don't know.
But he talks about it like he's hundreds of years old, and like, so that's like the weird part about this. Like when Splinter narrates, you know, you get the sense he has this whole mythology of like, this is an age-old blood feud and he's hundreds of years old and there's this knowledge to pass down to his sons and blah blah blah. And like the takeaway that I can't help but think of is like, I think this rat just made all this shit up on the spot to con these turtles. Right? No. Like,
yeah, and he's not trying to give them rational explanations. Like, he expects them to sort of blindly follow him, and then answers will eventually come when he figures them out. I don't know. Or when he has time to explain them. Like, I do like that they kind of, that what they've done is they've taken like really weird like experiences with their animals, which would probably be like, you know, very basic like survival kind of stuff or like traumatic like violent experiences, and use that to shape their motivations when they did actually mutate into like humanoid creatures. Like Hob is like just, you know, like ridiculously like pissed off at them, yeah. Right? And you're just like, why? He wants to kill them so bad. Why? And it's like,
motherfucker ate his eyeball out. I mean, I'm gonna,
yeah. But that's all that it stems from, right? It's not like they have like a, you know what I mean? Like they have like years of like rivalry. It's just like when they were animals, Splinter ripped his eyeball out, and now like now that he's like a humanoid, like that experience has fueled like emotional hatred on top of like, you know, like just traumatic experience. Like it's kind of crazy. Like it's interesting how they did that.
So what I read into this was that because it's so tied into their, and I like that you get the details that they remember their lives when they were little. Like Splinter remembers his pre-mutagen life. The turtles remember their pre-mutagen life. So I like that, like ties in that they will remember April later on. That's kind of why they like her and why she comes in later on, I imagine. But by the same token, I think that that colors or slants their experience of the world as they live today. So like when Splinter talks about an age-old rivalry, I mean, I just looked it up. The average lifespan of a brown rat is 2 years. So for him, age-old might be a shit from a year and a half ago, you know? And like, old Hob, like, it seems like he's maybe like going a bit too far. But when you are a cat and something eats your eyeball out, you don't have the cognitive capacity to deal with that that you would post mutagen, I would say. So like how does that animal instinct that he had before dial up to now a humanoid thing? Like it's all kind of like I don't know. I kind of want to filter it through the lens of when they were little animals, but by the same token, like they're clearly not anymore. Like it says teenage right in the thing, so
yeah, right. Well, my thinking is it's like, you know, they obviously were living animal lives. So, like, the experience they've experienced as animals have evolved with their mutation. Like, so they've mutated into, like, a higher, you know, intelligent being. Maybe those very, like, basic, you know, things have also evolved and become more complicated, I guess. I mean, that's my takeaway. That's the only, like, you know, That's what I'm getting out of this, I guess, more than anything else.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, as they got more complicated in intelligence, their very simple problems when they were animals sort of like almost bloomed into a more complicated thing in their mind. So that's the only thing I can think of, right?
Yeah.
That's the only kind of conveyance I'm getting from the way it was written. It's an interesting take, though, because they never really, like, touched on that before.
So. Yeah, and, like I hadn't thought about it until we started talking about, like, what is their perspective? Like, what is their perspective of, like, their life? Not, like, their memories and stuff, but, like, how shifted is your worldview when your lifespan went from 2 years to, I don't know, 20, we'll say, for Splinter? Like, times 10 is a pretty good improvement. So, like, how does that, like, color and change the way you're experiencing. I don't know. And that's the other thing, is that's probably a little bit more high-minded than this comic wants to aim for. We're probably, like, wading way deep into it.
Yeah, my guess is they'll either touch on it later, Or maybe they won't. I don't know. Maybe they're just going to leave it to the reader. That's a little bit about how the old one used to be. But the other one, the way the old stuff was like they kind of mapped things out so that when they did stuff, like, you could understand how those characters would act in that situation because they're, you know, they've been developed in that way. But this one is sort of like you're kind of relying on, like, a combination of this new narrative plus what you kind of already know about them to begin with, which they touch up on, right? So it's like, well, they're pretty much, like, the same. Like, their personalities obviously are, like, what you're accustomed to, right? Compared to, like, classic Turtle stuff. So it's like, okay, so, like, you know what you're getting when you see, you know, the Turtles or April or Casey Jones or even Baxter Stockman, really. Like they all kind of take on a pretty similar personality to how they've been classically portrayed. They're just in new circumstances, I guess.
Yeah. So, here's the money question. Who is your favorite turtle?
I think that the answer that you're supposed to give is Raph, because he's cool but rude. You know, but my favorite was always Donatello.
Yeah. I think that's, I don't know.
He was a smart one. He was a smart one. He made all the cool stuff. And even in this, you get to see, you see him tinkering.
Yeah.
In one shot.
He's got, like, the goggles and shit in one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Donatello has also been my favorite since, like, the 87 cartoon.
See, I liked Michelangelo. Because you do when you're a kid. And then I learned that it was, like, not cool to like Michelangelo. So I started liking Donatello.
Why was it not cool?
Because everybody liked Michelangelo. Like you were a kid if you liked Michelangelo. You gotta have a more mature taste.
It was almost too trendy to like Michelangelo back
then. Yeah, right. Yeah. So then, like, I kind of thought Donatello, but I was like, no, nobody likes Leo, so I'm gonna give Leo. I was like, Leo's gonna be my guy.
Well, you can't like Leo because he's too uptight.
But dude, he's got the leader problem. Like if you're a team, if you're the leader of a team, then you're the character nobody likes. Nobody's favorite X-Man is Cyclops. Nobody's favorite Ninja Turtle is Leonardo. And if you are, you're probably lying. Or you're uptight too.
Or you're Andy Weiglin.
No. So at that point, I was like, no, this is fucking dumb. I don't actually like Leonardo. I came back around to embracing my Michelangelo. I like Mikey. I don't care. I don't care if he's juvenile. I love it. I love the unorthodox.
I'm going to go ahead and break that mold. I actually really liked Leonardo growing up. I mean, mostly it was the swords more than anything else. Because it's just like, okay, he's got the best weapon. Like, yeah, why wouldn't you like him?
Yeah, Donnie had the worst
weapon. That was kind of my thinking.
Donnie has the worst weapon.
I didn't like his personality in the original cartoon because he was just like really dopey. Plus, like, his voice was just, I don't like that voice actor. And I never have. Like, in anything. And he's in everything. It's like, what's his name? Cam something or other? I don't remember. Sure. But really, really common, like, voice actor. He's in, like, every cartoon ever and, like, half the video games you probably ever played and the whole bit, right? Like, and I can always hear his voice and it's always like, ah, this guy again. You know? I don't know. I just never liked it. So that always bothered me. So I liked, and I like leadership characters if they're done right. And then some comics he's done really well, you know, and some, like, you know, some ways he's been portrayed as really cool. I liked him. But to be perfectly honest, my absolute favorite has always been Raph, because, not because he's cool but rude, but because he's, like, the most capable, like, below the surface, right? But he always struggles with sort of, like, just crazy emotional issues and just, like, anger problems. So he's just, like, a flawed character because, like, even though he's, like, easily the most, like, physically, you know, capable, the most talented, everything, right? He has these character flaws that prevent him from really, like, fully, like, you know, reaching a full potential.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, I love that about his character, and it's always very well done, almost in anything, except for the original cartoon. He's just freaking stupid. But, I
Yeah.
Just like, angry guy with emotional problems? Let's just make him a sarcastic guy. Yeah.
Let's just make him a fucking asshole, because every team needs an asshole, too. This one's going to be rough.
No, yeah, but also a sarcastic contrarian. That'll be great. The kids will love it.
And also, it makes him the most easily dynamic character in the cast, too. Like, Splinter's got a backstory or a past, I guess, kind of. But, you know, all right. But, like, the other three are kind of stock in some ways. Like, Mikey's stock with Cowabunga. Yeah, that's Mikey. You know, and Leo is the loyal leader. And Donatello's the smarter, nerdy, calculating. Like, they're stock characters. But Raph, like, even in the one it gives here, like, that's the one who goes his own way. Like, but what does that mean? Like, contextually, like, what does that mean? Like, you have to take an extra sentence or two or an extra part of the story to explain what that means. Whereas the other three, you can know that character in four words. But Raph, he needs a little bit more explanation on how his character works. So he's naturally, I think, one of the more interesting characters, because you have to flesh it out a little bit more.
Yeah, and you know, another thing too is like I'm pretty sure there's a little bit of bias there, because Raphael is Kevin Eastman's brainchild, and I would say out of the creative pair of him and Peter Laird, I would say he's had probably the most like structured impact on the series. Like, I think the things that people like about Ninja Turtles have probably come from him. Like, because, you know, he's like, you know, he's kind of big on Frank Miller, which is a little bit on the edgy side, which also kind of, like, you can see that influenced in his art and stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And he likes Raph as the more complicated character. He likes, you know, Casey Jones is, like, also his sort of brainchild, you know. So it's kind of like, so you kind of see, like, all right, like, those are sort of his contributions to it, like, first and foremost, whereas, like, you kind of get the feeling that the other characters maybe were like, okay, this guy's gonna be this, this guy's gonna be this, this guy's gonna be this. What are we gonna do with this other guy? And, you know, like, oh, let me think this one over. You know what I mean? So it feels like maybe the other characters were, like, quicker to be developed, maybe, on the idea board, you know, whereas Raph is kind of took a little bit more. And it sort of kind of shows up. It's, and I like how they highlight him in this one too. I think it's very interesting how they chose to. I like the fact that they separated them. Like, they were just like, oh yeah, here's separation, and I'm like, oh, they don't even know who he is. Like, as a basically as a humanoid.
Yeah, like, they only remember him as a turtle.
Yeah, I really like that too. I kind of assumed that it was going to be the same type of thing as the movie, where Raph, you know, has this, like, his pride and self-esteem are hurt, so he leaves the group. But I liked the way they did it in this one. I thought that was a cool, different way to go.
And it's good because you see how the other three deal with it. You know, you see, like, you get their stock character thing, sure, but you also see how their dynamic works. Like, Leo wanting to be loyal, Donatello wanting to do what's logical, and Michelangelo being the one who brokers the peace between those two. Like, being the one, like, let's just find some solution that doesn't fit either one of your perfect little molds.
Yeah, it's, they did a pretty good job, like, developing their dynamics separately, since they literally never met Raph, like, in a meaningful, intelligent way. Right, they know he's their brother. They know he's out there somewhere. Maybe he's not. Like, and you already see, like, this sort of detachment, right? Like, it's all Splinter. Like, Splinter is like you gotta get him. Like, he's your brother. Like, you know, he's like, you don't understand. Like, he is the, like, an essential fabric for this. Like, we're not complete without him. And they're just like I know we gotta, like, do everything he says because he's our dad, and, like, that's what you do for dads. You know, like, they have that sort of, like, weird understanding, but they still, like, already, like, questioning it. Like, never met this guy. I don't know what he's about. Like, he could just be dead. What the heck? You know, like, they're just, yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And I think that insistence from Splinter comes back to the fact that he had the cognition beforehand. Like, I feel like the turtles can have more detachment from Raph because they didn't have higher cognition earlier on, but Splinter did have higher cognition when they were little animals. So
it like that little twist in the story that has Splinter being smarter than them earlier, like it's not just the it's not just the father-son dynamic that he's built, but the fact that he does have more knowledge from before. Like, to the Turtles, he is a source of information and a source of knowledge and wisdom that they didn't have from that time. So he has established himself as being older and wiser, even if it is by, like, 6 months.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that definitely... He's like, obviously capable and wiser and smarter, and he's been more, like, coherent. For longer than they have, but yeah, it is interesting. And then the fact that like before it's sort of like, you know, they're like, oh yeah, we're all ninjas and he's our master, and they're like, but we're teenagers, so we gotta do kind of weird stuff to like bend the rules, you know. That's kind of their dynamic, and this one it actually kind of like gives you a reason to be like, okay, yeah, here's a reason why they would disobey him, because it's like their experience is completely different than his. And they're kind of like being forced to just take him at his word because they trust him. And it's like, but that's not enough. Like, you know, they're becoming more intelligent. They're like, you know, logical reasoning is kind of telling them, like, is this really like the best option? Like,
yeah, they're learning to question that judgment.
Yeah. And it's kind of ironic that sort of deviation from that sort of strict, you know, behavior is actually what ends up, you know, reaching the conclusion in this small arc, which I think is kind of cool.
So what did you guys, what did y'all think of the art in this?
I really liked it. I thought it was cool. I'm glad it wasn't, I mean, as much as I liked the original cartoon when I was a kid, I don't think that would be good comic book art. I really like this. And it's cool, I didn't realize that this was like exactly the same as the original comic, so that's kind of cool.
I liked it. My only complaint is that it is so hard to tell the turtles apart unless you're looking at their weapons.
I know. At first I kind of liked that all of the, what are they called, the headband bandana things. I like that they were all the same color at first, because I was like, yeah, that makes more sense. But then I'm like, oh, that's why they did it.
Yeah.
Like, I get that Donatello has, like, the darkest green of the three, or the four of them, but, like, when they're all fighting, I can't tell.
Yeah, or if one, like, steps into shadow at all, it's impossible.
Well, if he steps in the shadow, it's definitely Raph.
Yeah. Well, you know, the original's in black and white, so there's no way you're going to tell them apart in the originals anyway.
Yeah, even worse off.
So that's where kind of like the all red thing came about. They didn't actually differentiate them in colors until the cartoon came out. And actually, I think the toy line before the cartoon is where they went, we need to differentiate these guys, so they're going to be different colors. I think it was honestly just a corporate decision to give them different colors at one point.
Man, I had some...
It's a good plan.
I had some great Ninja Turtle toys. Shit, I forgot all about them. I think I have one in my sunroom right now.
I kind of got mine sort of scattered around all the action figures.
I had what was the like mecha Ninja Turtle?
Oh, Metalhead.
Yes, I had a Metalhead that was fucking sick. It was all shiny and shit. Oh man.
Oh, heck yeah, I got that guy. He's freaking rad. Yeah, that was a cool one. My favorite of the old toys was Pandacon. It's basically just a Mongolian panda guy. It's freaking awesome. So badass. He's just a Genghis Khan panda warrior.
That's awesome.
Best action figure ever. Like, next to Usagi Yojimbo, you're just like, pretty sure Pandacon wins every single time.
What about Pandacon or Chen Storm Stout?
Still going Pandacon. Same. All right. It goes way back for me, that's all.
Yeah, but getting back to the art, I did really, really like the art in this. I like the flow of action, which is, I mean, obviously essential. If you got a comic that you're basing in martial arts, you have to have good action sequences. And I think even when they had a big crowd and four characters going around at once, it was easy to follow, and it was easy to make big jumps across the gutter from frame to frame. And it flowed incredible. Even the more casual scenes flowed really well, too. I really appreciated the the pacing of the art. Not necessarily the story all the time, but the pacing of the art was, like, on point constantly.
Yeah, if I had to... If anything, it was so smooth that it made it read almost too fast. Does that make sense?
This was 4 issues. I was done with this in, like, 20 minutes. I was like, oh.
Yeah. It was like a 15-minute read for me. And I was like, oh, man, like, I gotta read this whole thing. And I was like, 15 minutes later, I'm like, oh. Well, that was awesome, but wow. You know?
Yeah, but can I get, like, 2 or 3 more issues on this?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird because that's a lot different than the originals. If you read, if you read the first run, they crammed so much stuff into the first, like, 7 issues. It's insane. They go from, like, origin story, meeting all the major characters in that universe, like, establishing villains, you know, going through some basic story arcs that people probably are familiar with, whether they realize it or not, if they're at all familiar with Ninja Turtles. And then they end up going to fucking space in 7 issues. Okay? Like, holy shit. Like, they crammed they're so epic. Like, I think that's another thing people don't give enough credit for the Ninja Turtles. It's like, the storytelling, dude, they could just do anything. Like, there is no limits, and it's all going to be pretty good, at least, you know? It's very good imaginative stuff, and that's I think that's the lore of the whole series. So, like, reading this, and it's just like, whew, and you're done, you're like, all right. I mean, that's cool. Let's see what else we got. You know what I mean? Like, so I'm, like, excited to read more, because it floats so well, but...
Yeah, and it's definitely setting... Did it go fast? It definitely sets you up for that escalation. Because Krang is there, and you know they're going to get with Krang, and Krang's not going to have a body for long. If he has one now. You know, and then, like, Shredder. Yeah, and then you get Shredder in here, and that interaction, and, like it'll get real wacky real fast.
Yeah, I'm anticipating a real escalation probably in the next trade or two. I got the first 8, because I went nuts and bought a bunch recently. because it's the only series I haven't read in earnest yet. I've read through every single series up to this point, and I would do the comic pulls on the volume 4 run, which is like the last one that Mirage did before they sold off to Nickelodeon. So, like, I'm like very up to speed on my Turtle comics, except for this series.
So I read so many places that this was the best one to read. So you apparently saved the best for last, my friend.
Exactly. I'm just doubling down on this one. I'm excited. And the fact that I think that, like, Kevin Eastman was, like, very much tied into this one. Like, he's my favorite of the two co-creators anyway. Like, I've actually had a chance to meet with him and talk to him. He's a super duper cool guy. And he's just, like, got just a great imagination. And he's super fun to just, like, kick around hilarious stuff with. So it's kind of cool. It's like, I'm like, oh, cool, he's in on this. Like, I'm excited now, you know? So, I don't know.
Just, nice.
I was nerding out pretty hard when this one came out. And then, of course, I never read it until now.
isn't there a pretty funny, like, story about how they came up with the idea of Ninja Turtles?
It was like an accident. Like, they were just, like, drawing random crap. And then eventually, like... One or both of them ended up drawing, like, the same thing. And it was like, oh, we should do that. So it's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Their influences are so ridiculous. Because, like, their biggest influences are Frank Miller and Jack Kirby. Which is, like, kind of 2 weird things to really somehow, you know, like, culminate into, like, to your creative process. Especially since, like, I've seen some Jack Kirby stuff, and I've read some Frank Miller, and this is kind of like, none of their stuff really hits that chord ever. So, like, the influence has got to be light at best, but it's kind of funny that, like, when interviewed and when asked about it, they always seem to cite those two as, like, their biggest influences.
You know what, though? I can see that, because Jack Kirby was all about the big, universal... mega weird stuff. Like, he's the one who created the fourth world in DC and all of the new gods. So, like, that, like, really weird, out there Jack Kirby stuff. I could see like Krang being a Jack Kirby thing. I can see, like Shredder's like mobile factory egg ball looking thing being the Jack Kirby thing. But at the same time, the I want to punch a dude in the face really hard is definitely Frank Miller thing. Like the penchant for violence built into this is also a Frank Miller thing. So I can see they are really disparate, but I can see how they're both in here.
Yeah, like Ninja Turtles number one, when they're just tearing Shredder up, and I'm not even joking, like they're hitting him with ninja stars, like in his flesh, and they're like tearing him up. Like the movie scene where he's fucking them up, it goes like the complete opposite in the comic. They fuck his shit up so bad, like it's not even funny. And you're just like, that's some Frank Miller shit right there. And then it like doesn't ever quite escalate to that level ever again. Like they kind of back it off at that point. But that sort of like sets a weird tone. You're just like, ah, damn, you know? It's so visceral. It's crazy. So, but yeah. Anyway, back to this one. Oh, we got to talk about the very end. Okay, the last page. Did anybody else like tear up a little bit? Just a little bit? That one, that messed me up, dude. I was like, oh man, that was good. I thought that was like, that just tugged at the heartstrings for me. I don't know why. Maybe it's because I have a brother. I don't know.
That could be it. None of us have brothers.
Yeah, maybe it's just an empathy thing. I don't know.
No, and
it was sweet though.
No, and I appreciate the payoff, like of them looking for him and how it's such a big deal for Splinter. Like that's a good emotional payoff for these characters.
Yeah, and it adds some authenticity to Splinter because I think he's so austere for the rest of the comic, just, you know, spouting wisdom and getting them to train. And here we see him like finally come down to their level where he's not, you know, the wise master, but he's the family member. And that is nice to see.
Yeah, get off your high horse.
It's his biggest hang up too, the whole thing, and you can tell. It's almost like inhibiting him from being like even better of a parent / mentor, right? So this sort of like emptiness, and it's like it just all kind of wraps up there at the end. It's like, hey, look who we found, and he just is like, oh, you found him. Like, oh man, I was just like, oh. I like that.
It's good for Mikey because now he doesn't have to find a way to cover his ass for banging. All right, let's get down to it. But before we rate this, I do want to take a minute to thank the people who made this. I want to thank Kevin Eastman and Tom Waltz for writing it. I want to thank Dan Duncan for doing pencils, Rhonda Pattison for doing colors, Robbie Robbins for doing letters, Sean Lee for doing letters, Scott Dunbeer and Bobby Kernow for doing the editing, and everybody else at IDW and all up and down who put this thing in our hands, because whatever we've said, whatever we're going to say when we rate it, whatever we end up, like, at the end of the day, there's the critic, and then there's the person who actually does the thing and makes it. So thank you guys for doing the effort. Thank you guys and gals for putting in the effort, doing the thing, getting it made, getting it in our hands so we can talk about it. Thank you for doing the creative effort and following through on it for us to enjoy. That said, I think I'm going to make David go first.
All right. So much pressure. So like I said, I really enjoyed this comic. So I'm going to give this a 4. And the reason I think maybe nostalgia is coloring my rating a little bit, but I thought this was a pretty solid story. And I really enjoyed it, but I think my enjoyment was turned up a notch because, you know, when I was a kid, I really liked Ninja Turtles, and I haven't really even thought about it that much in recent years. And I really, like I said, I enjoyed this, but it made me think about a lot of my favorite episodes from the original cartoon and all this. So if you're like our age, like, you know, in your early 30s, early to mid 30s, and you were a kid in the late 80s and early 90s, I think that you'll really enjoy this comic because it's a big nostalgia kick. But more than that, it is a good comic. I mean, it's not the best thing I've ever read, but I really, really enjoyed it. And you know, I think if you are interested in reading a Ninja Turtles comic, this is a great place to start. Because it is an origin story. But it's really compact and tight. And, you know, like you guys said, I was done with it really quick, but I was ready to read issue 5 as soon as I finished issue 4. So, yeah, I'm going to give this a 4.
Okay, I'm going to say a 3. I think part of that is because I felt like it blew by so fast. So I was like, wait, isn't there more? And it felt a little abrupt just because it's like, you know, some of the stuff we talked about earlier, like, why does Casey beat up random dudes for fun? And, you know, why does this rat and group of turtles who are apparently 15 months old have this, like, long ancient history? But it was enjoyable, and yeah, I certainly experienced nostalgia. Like, I was obsessed with the cartoon when I was a kid, and it was really fun to go back and, like, remember all the stuff about it and be like, oh yeah, I remember why I liked this so much. At the same time, you know, I think if I read more, that rating will go up, but just based on the first 4 issues, it didn't feel like quite enough for me. So 3.
All right. And I'm going to save Jiminy for last. I'm going to go. I want to give this a 3.5 right in between because I'm indecisive and I'm just going to steal both of your guys' opinions. No, I feel like tonally, this hits just the right point for me. Like, I like a character. I like a comic that has more grown-up themes. Like, I'm not... It's going to sound really weird to say, but I'm glad that... I'm glad that Casey is the victim of domestic abuse and that there's reasons and motivations that he has that are relatable to an adult reader and aren't laughable to an adult reader. And I like that on the other side, he's beating up purse snatchers. I feel like the shorthand way to say my comic is for adults is to have random bad guy do rape or something just way in the extreme that you definitely would not want to ever have a kid read. Like, but no, you don't have to have, you know, you don't have to have horrible things in this. You can just have everyday bad things, but have genuine motivations because life isn't in those extremes. It's here kind of in the more temperate area for most people. And I get that Ninja Turtles aren't most people, but Casey kind of is, and the purse snatcher and the random dude stealing the purse, like, and the woman, like, those are normal people. So I like that this feels like a more genuine, normal experience of a world where ridiculous fucking things are happening with ooze and Ninja Turtles. But that's part of that's a comic. So I think tonally this strikes the balance that I really enjoy. And like I said, I really like reading this, but I'm also with you, Jen, that this is a really good origin, but I feel like it's fine. It found its footing in issue 4. And if I would have gotten 2 more issues of it solidly footed like this, it would have been fantastic. But that's 2 more issues we didn't get. So I feel like I need to read second trade, which I'll do because I got the IDW Ultimate Collection, which is like the first 17 issues or something ridiculous, and it's gorgeous. So consider buying that. All right. J-Money, what do you got? Just a reminder, J-Money, 2.5 is average, and however high or low you want to go is totally subjective and up to you. There's no, like, there's no rhyme or reason to this for us.
No. I'm going to go, like, let's go 3.75. I'm going to go even more in the middle. And the only reason, so, like, as a fan of, with a very, like, thorough, like, background in, like, the lore and different comic runs and different cartoons, this is above average, you know. It tells a good story. I like where it's going. I want to get into this. I want to see where this is going. I want to see this interpretation of this. I am all in. Mm-hmm. So it gets the bump for that. Where I would dock it points would be it was way too fast of a read. Like, classic Turtle comics, like, every issue feels like a fucking epic adventure. You just get lost. I'm like, where are they going to go now? What are they doing? Like, there's just so much stuff just crammed into those pages. And I didn't get that sense. It didn't, like, capture that sort of, like, I don't know. I always feel like there's a certain, like, starving artist thing going on where they have to make every single one count because it could be the last issue they ever write. And I think that sort of almost elevates the creative process in those early comics, and even in some of the runs that were less popular. There's a lot of that, and I didn't quite get that energy. Like, these people are pretty safe in their job, so they're obviously, this has been written to like set up a much larger thing, and that's fine. I mean, that's cool. I'm all right with them setting up a universe and telling a new story. It's just kind of, it's different. It's good. It's different. It's not the best thing I read. It's not my favorite Casey Jones. Baxter Stockman is like absent completely. You don't get any sense for what he's going to be like yet. So, it's a little bit thin on character development, whereas like classic Turtles is always like, that was almost like a feature. You know, these characters are so well defined. This almost relies on that previous understanding.
To
carry it. It relies on previous lore to carry it. That's like, but you're writing a new story. You're clearly trying to go in a new direction. But it is kind of leaning pretty heavy on the fact that, like, okay, you know what they're reading, right? Come on. You know what I mean? Like,
Nobody picked this up randomly.
No one's going to be like, I've never heard of these Ninja Turtles. I'm going to try this out. No, they kind of, they kind of know that people picking that up are picking it up for a reason. So it's definitely written with that in mind. So it's, it's getting docked in my mind in that way, only because, like, even in other series where the Ninja Turtles are established, it always seems like they go gung-ho for it, especially in the comics, because it's such, like, even though that's where the series is based in, it always feels like, well, just the comics is not their most popular place, so we really got to ham it up to make it good. And this didn't feel like it had that pressure to deliver, So, it's great. I like it. I'm always going to fucking like it as long as it's a solid Turtles story, and it's great for people who are like, if you got a comics background, you're going to like this. If you like the old cartoon, you're probably going to have no goddamn clue what's going on here. or maybe you're going to fall in love with these new characters and this new interpretation.
Yeah, no, I think you'd like this, because most of my experience is with the old cartoons, and I like this, I think, more than I like the cartoons. Definitely more than I would like them today.
I guess I should rephrase that. An adult who maybe watched the cartoon and maybe went back and went, oh, this didn't age well. And you come to something like this and you go, okay, yeah, I see what's going on
here. Yeah.
Anybody who ever watched the old movie, which, to be perfectly honest, okay, the original Ninja Turtles movie is probably one of the best aging, like, comic book movies I've ever seen. Like, that's a personal opinion. I'm not a movie critic.
You know, it's funny. I know that it ends with Vanilla Ice near the end.
No. That's the second one.
That's the second one? Okay.
The second one. That's awful. Now, the first one is, like, all it is, like, comics kind of, like, they just took frames from the comic and crammed it into a movie.
Okay. And then I should try and watch that, because I honestly, I'm trying to think about what that movie was, and the only thing that comes into my mind instead is Three Ninjas Kick Back, and I have no idea why. I can't read this. I can't remember it because there's a block, because there's another movie that's superseding it.
Yeah, 2 and 3 were awful. I mean, they were totally ham-fisted and just designed for children. Right? The first one, it's like, okay, yeah, like, it's for kids, but we're really trying to tell an original story here. I don't know. It's a little bit more mature than that. And even, like, if you even look at, like, the way the characters look, they look a little bit grittier.
Yeah.
A little less goofy. Their eyes aren't fucking huge, and they don't look like fucking Bugs Bunny and shit. Like, it's a little bit more artistically based rather than just, like, goofball nonsense, right?
Yeah.
So, check it out. It's a good read, eh?
All right, then that's it for this week. If you want to see what we have coming up, go to welcometocomics.com. On the right, there's a link that says Future Show. If you like this one, there's a link that says Past Shows, as 321 previous episodes on it. I'm also, by the time this goes up, there should be another link that says High Five Club, because I didn't know what else to call it. And that's the episodes of the comics that we all gave fives to. That sounds self-indulgent for me to bake a page talking about the ones that we really liked. But when it comes down to it, we've been doing this a long time, and I try to remember all the ones that got unanimous fives. And it's hard to recall them off the top of my head every time. So it's kind of a tool there for me, but I thought, why not publish it and see if anybody else wants to take a look too. So hopefully by the time you hear this episode, that'll be it. You can go to welcometocomics.com. It'll be on the right there. If you like the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support us for a penny or a dollar or a grand or whatever you want. Please do a grand. I'd love $1,000. You can follow me at Jolly Andy. You can follow the show at Welcome to Comics on Twitter and facebook.com/welcometocomics. Yeah, and that's it. Until next week, everybody. Oh, wait, no. Next week, we're going to read G.I. Joe Volume 3 by Larry Hama. It collects issues 21 to 30. But I think we're only going to read like the first 5 or 6, because 10 issues is a lot to knock out in a week for a show. And they're big. They're like the archive tomes, kind of, you know. So we're not going to do all of that trade, but we're going to do a good chunk of it. We're going to do definitely the first half, for sure, that has the Snake Eyes issue in the front. So yeah, next time is G.I. Joe Volume 3. And then that's it. Until next week, everybody. Goodbye.